Hello and welcome to Outside In. I'm John Burns and this is my podcast for outdoor folk. Of late, my ability to shift around the hills at any great rate at all has been diminishing, largely because of the amount of kit I carry, I think. But there's one man, my guest today, I think from looking at his CV, he looks to me as if he can shift a bit, frankly. My guest today is a runner. He's a cyclist and an environmentalist, and he says he's got a passion for adventures, both wee and muckle. If you don't know what wee means, small, obviously, and I think muckle means big. And he's just published his book, Running Adventures Scotland, which I think covers 25 running routes through the Scottish Hills. And I think I'll let him talk about why he chose what he chose and where he's coming from. So my guest today is Ross Brannigan. How are you, Ross?
Hi, John. Yeah, doing great. Thanks. Speaking to you from the old grey town of Kendal, which is earning its nickname today. And yeah, doing great. Glad to be on. It's really nice to speak to you.
So you've been exiled to England, have you?
Yeah, dragged kicking and screaming out of the border.
Well, to be fair, if you've got to be in England, Kendal's not a bad place to be. So it's that's not fair bad. Enough. So tell me, obviously you're not from Kendal. How did you start getting into running in the hills or even walking in the hills?
Yeah, definitely. Like walking in the hills, as you kind of allude to, sort of where my, you know, history is in terms of like getting outdoors and stuff. So when I was very, very small, I think my parents took me up the Wangi just outside of Glasgow because I was sort of living in Milton of Campsie at the foot of the Campsie Hills when I was very, very small. And then right. As a youngster, we moved to Tillicoutry in Clackmannanshire, which if anyone then doesn't know where Clackmannanshire is, it's just east of Stirling, which is my usual way of telling people where it is, at the foot of the Ochil Hills. And yeah, basically growing up was just a case of us going up into the hills all the time. And then by the age of 10, we'd started going up and doing Munros. So I remember I went up and did Cairn Uisda and the Cairn Well, I think just before my 10th birthday. They were my first two Munros. And then since then, really, it's kind of been a case of tripping around Scotland, following my parents in the caravan and ticking off Munros. And then that kind of steadily morphed into more of an interest in running. And then more latterly, sort of for the past 5 years or so, I kind of took that love for the hills and combined it with my sort of newfound love of running and really just got to experience a bit more in a day, really.
Yeah.
There's something to it. So yeah, it's I guess you could say it's been the best part of 20 years or so, getting up into the hills, and kind of the culmination is what you will find in the book, really.
Right. And when you were planning the book, obviously you've 25 routes, and you've also some multi-day routes you picked. Mm. But can I ask you, when you're trying to decide what you're going to focus on, what would you say is the difference between a good running route and a good walking? Is there a difference, you think?
Yeah, it's a really good question, because I spent a long time, you can ask my fiance this.
Oh, right.
I spent a long time like wondering what would make a good running route. And I think I ended up coming with some criteria as a starting point. And I think I had three or four set of criteria. One of which was, is it a route that's just loved by runners? You can find that through my various networks, friends in Scottish Hill Running, or looking on Strava, where people upload their runs and so on, and you can kind of see where people gravitate towards.
Oh,
and
okay.
So I kind of every time I knew in the back of my mind some of the routes that I loved running, but I wanted to sort of keep an eye out for what other routes people tended to gravitate towards. So that was kind of one of the first obvious ones, was do people go there to run? And are they like, oh, this is superb? So that's a really obvious one. The second thing was, is it a race route? Or is it a route that's maybe done as part of like a round? So people right. might be familiar with the Bob Graham round or the yes, Ramsay yeah. round and so on. So that was another basis for it. It's like, does it have a particular significance in Scottish hill running in terms of like competitive side of things? For instance, Pentland Skyline is in there because it's a good race route. And so is the Tranter round because it's a phenomenal round. And then also, does it have some kind of history to it? So Scottish hill running has been going for a very, very long time. Dates back to sort of like the Middle Ages, I think, when it was used to determine who would be the fastest messenger runner for the king. And so there are a couple of routes in there which have got like a special connection to Scottish hill running history. Mm-hmm. For instance, the South Glenshiel Ridge was part of John Broxap's Munro round back in the 1980s when he ran, I think it was like 20 odd Munros in a day. I can't remember exactly off the top of my head. It was like 28, I wow. think. and that included the South Glenshiel Ridge. So it has like a key place in Scottish hill running history. So yeah, that was kind of my basis for it. And then after that, like you say, what makes a good hill running route versus a good walking route? And I think this is best sort of summarized in a trip I did up to Torridon. Everybody listening to this podcast likely knows Ben A, stunning mountain in the Torridon yep. area.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. Yeah,
I'm sure they do. And it was as we, you know, we went up Royston Moor, and we were coming off the top, and it was me and my fiance, and we were just a bit like, you know, this is good, but I'm not getting much of a flow to it. Like I couldn't get into a good rhythm of like running because you're kind of picking your way through boulders and stuff.
Yeah.
And we dropped down to the triple buttress and round the back, and I said to Bo, I was like, I'm gonna continue on and go and do Ben Allaghan. And so she went back to the car, and I ran down the back path towards Ben Allaghan and headed up the Horns. And then once I was on the top of Ben Allaghan, I just had this sublime grassy ridge. I got into a really nice rhythm. It was really runnable. And I think that's kind of a nice summation of, you know, one route that I thought, oh, this will be a great route. It's in the Keltman triathlon. People run this as like, you know, quite often, Ben A. But I didn't find that it really got that groove for me. I didn't feel like I was getting a good rhythm. And so I went off and did Ben Allaghan. I was like, this is great. Like, this is superb running. And there was something in that I was like, this is how I can kind of like see the difference between the walking routes and the running routes, where runners are wanting to do just that. They want to run. And if you've got like ridge lines and smooth trails, it doesn't all have to be like super tame. But I think for a large number of people who will be looking at a book like this, they'll be wanting to get out for a run and not be slogging through bogs or heather for much of it, even though that's what I like. And the kind of like the draw of hill running is that you're bashing through heather and jumping through bogs and off path and so on. That's kind of the charm of it. There's a very small market for that. So it was, I had to kind of reel myself in and listen to my inner sort of like trail runner type personality and go, keep it in check. Remember, this is not realistic for a lot of people, you know, climbing over 100 meters for every kilometer. Is perhaps not everybody's cup of tea. I should say 1,000 meters per kilometer is not everybody's cup of tea. So yeah, that was kind of the way I decided on them.
It sounds more and more horrific the more you talk about it to people. You suggest, but I mean, so really, what you seem to be saying is that, and it does make sense that if you're wanting to run something, you really need to be able to run it. You need to be. Mm. It needs to be not exactly a straight path, but it needs to be somewhere where you can get a bit of a rhythm going and a bit of a where you can get some sort of pace, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's pace, but I think it's just kind of finding a bit of flow, really.
Yeah.
You know, South Glenshiel Ridge is a perfect example. Like, after a bit of steep up and kind of rough, rocky path to start, you're then on this ridge where you're basically tripping over Munro summits. And, you know, it's just got this lovely, smooth rhythm to it, and you get the ups, but you also get these lovely grassy downs. And I did try to mix it up a bit because I realized, like, you know, something like the South Glenshire Ridge isn't for everybody. So I threw in a couple other ones that are maybe a bit wilder. Just kind of tick the box, and others which I've perhaps walked and didn't enjoy them as a walk, but I absolutely loved them as a run.
Right. Okay.
Which was an interesting thing to kind of experience.
And the thing, you know better than me, but it certainly seemed to me that people have seen running, obviously the major difference, I suppose, apart from the actual speed and the ground you're covering, is the kit you carry. Because obviously, if you're hill walking, you can carry a lot of backup kick. You know, you can have your cagoule, you can carry spare food. You've got a bit of something to fall back on, I suppose, if maybe you turn your ankle, or maybe the weather suddenly gets bad. But it strikes me you're pretty vulnerable if you're just, you know, there's you and a pair of shorts and your shoes and you're running and that's it. Is that right? Yeah. Or is that a misconception?
Yeah, to a degree it's correct, but I think it depends on how much of a purist you are about it. I think for some people, I do see a lot of runners who, you know, fair play to them, go out running in the mountains in winter in their shorts. But from my perspective as someone who's come from hill walking and is quite aware of mountain safety, I know how badly wrong it can go very, very suddenly. Yeah. But a lot of the kit has been designed to be lightweight but also be protected from the elements, and I think it's not so clear as saying that, you know, that runners carry less kit. It's often that it's been designed to pack down pretty small. However, that said, oftentimes, you know, a pair of running trousers aren't, like, running waterproof trousers aren't going to be as bomb proof as a pair of hill walking waterproof trousers are. So it comes with its it comes with its drawbacks, to be honest. But really, I think for me, I tend to err much more on the side of going out to enjoy myself. Like, you can pack racy if you like, you know, stripping it right back and going for the bare minimum. But I'm someone who likes to pack a Sorin into my bag, a couple of sandwiches, take an extra layer, my waterproof trousers if it's, you know, a bit breezy or wet, and maybe an extra waterproof jacket. And actually, I have experienced running in a mountaineering jacket before. okay. And that's just something that you just have to be prepared for sometimes. If the weather is looking absolutely foul on a really, like, miserable winter day, then you're skimpy, like, running waterproof jacket is definitely not going to cut it then. So you gotta go out prepared no matter what speed you're going at.
Right. And you mentioned earlier what that interested me, really. You talked about basically being able to use the internet to share information. And I think this is one of the ways that the internet has sort of changed the outdoors in that I'm guessing you're still talking actually about a fairly minority sport if you compare it to hill walking. But obviously, you know, you can exchange information all across the country. But also, is it the case that you know, the things that people show on YouTube these days are perhaps generating interest in a way that didn't happen before?
Yeah, I think so. And I think as well, like, particularly with Strava, if people don't know what Strava is, it's basically you'll know, you've got watches that can track your activity. They can track you going for a walk or a run, for instance, and then that usually connects to something like Garmin or Suunto or whatever app, and then that then connects to Strava. Strava is basically social media for runners, cyclists, and other outdoor sport enthusiasts, and you get to see what everybody else is up to, photographs, give people likes and kudos and comments and things on. It does make it very, it makes other activities seem quite achievable. So if you're inspired by someone else going off and doing some big challenge or whatever, then perhaps you'll be drawn to do it too. If you're somebody who's a bit more of a trail runner and you start to see a couple of your friends venturing out into the hills, then maybe you'll give that a crack as well. So I think it definitely is opening the outdoors up to a wider number of people who perhaps haven't considered that previously. There's obviously some some issues that come with that. People, like we were kind of just talking about just there, who maybe don't go out necessarily prepared for a day in the mountains. Like a day on the trail down by the riverside is very different to running in the Cairngorms.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, as we've seen sort of through lockdown, people are getting much more interested in getting into the outdoors. And I think it's about giving them the right tools to be welcoming and be like, yeah, it's absolutely awesome that you want to go out and experience these places. But giving them the safety advice as well that comes along with that. And that's something I've kind of hit home quite hard in the book is, you know, safety and experience and trying to speak from somebody who's been a hill walker and is now a hill runner to people who perhaps have always just been runners. And yeah, teaching them about safety in the mountains and changing that idea from just, you know, going for a run around your local park to running in the Cairngorms.
Absolutely. And so how do your, you've got multi-day routes. How do they work? Are they essentially supported? Do they need to be supported? Because you can't really carry a tent, can you?
Oh, yeah, you can. I think what...
Oh, gold.
One of the routes that's multi-day is the Tranter Round, as I've already mentioned. I think what I would expect people who would want to do that probably is they maybe want to split it over 2 days. You would take a tent or a bivy bag, probably have a 30 to 35 liter rucksack. You're not moving especially fast, but you're certainly like what people would describe as fast packing.
What's the difference between running and fast packing? This is very confusing to me.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of different terminology going around. You just wait till we get into trail running, mountain running, and
I don't even want to go
hill running versus fell running, and it's just a whole lexicon that you're just completely bamboozled by. But yeah, fast packing, I guess, is it's like, I'm trying to think of the best way to describe it. It's basically, it's runners who are doing a bit more on the hiking side. It's kind of a blend of running and hiking. You're dressed as a runner, and you are moving quickly, but you're certainly not moving as fast as if you were going full out, like running. Good person to look at is go onto YouTube and check out Jenny Tuff. Jenny does some amazing fast packing trips across like the Rocky Mountains. She's doing those in, like, you know, I think she ran across the mountains of Kazakhstan in a few weeks, and she was like, you know, in running shoes with poles, a pack that was probably about 35 liters, she was like running good chunks of it, but, you know, hiking a large part as well. So those multi-day ones are a bit more fast packing kind of idea, where you're taking the stuff to get you through 3-4 days on the trail, but yeah, you're still packing light and moving a little bit quicker than you would be walking.
Right. And do you think it's something that is going to develop, is keeping developing? I mean,
I think definitely fast packing is becoming very interesting for people now. And I'm not entirely sure why that is. I think maybe there's a bit more exposure to those types of adventures. Mm-hmm. And people are wanting to spend more quality time outdoors, I think. Either for just out of curiosity, I think. Some people are like, I want to join up these two locations, but perhaps they're a little bit time poor, if you like.
They can't
take like 2 months off work, so they'll maybe do it as a fast packing trip instead. And I think that's something that's really developing, and it's certainly an area I'm getting a bit more into, having come from like a background of doing day hill walks and then venturing into the overnight thing. And then as a runner, sort of just focusing really on the, like, you know, runs that take 3 to 4 hours. But now I'm sort of like, oh, it's possible to sort of run the hike for 8 hours in a day and cover the same distance that otherwise would take me, you know, a few days to do. I think it just gives a sense of adventure whilst not having to take out so much of the time that you perhaps, you know, you have available to you.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, quite frankly, I suppose in a way, the gear to do that is around these days. Whereas, you know, obviously, you know, a lot of stuff has got ultra lightweight that you certainly couldn't be lugging a canvas tent around. So, you know,
absolutely. Yeah, the shoes have developed massively. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, go back a few years, fast packing was certainly not a thing. It's the same thing we're starting to see in cycling. Gravel bikes were not a thing, you know, 10 years ago, even less, perhaps.
Yeah.
But now people are starting to find that there's a nice blend between road cycling and mountain biking, where perhaps you're a roadie who wants to get into mountain biking, but you can't quite give up Lycra quite yet. So you get into gravel riding instead. And I say that as somebody who is a gravel rider. So, yeah, I think there's it's whatever excites you and gets your imagination going. I think I spend a lot of time looking at maps and just thinking, how can I connect up all these dots? But, you know, walking it, I kind of don't have the time, or don't want to be lugging around that much kit, or, you know, wearing big boots, but I kind of want to move fast. So that's just how you do it. And I think it's everybody's got their own levels of how quickly they think they should be able to do something. You know, you might watch somebody who's able to run 100 miles in, you know, a lot less than 24 hours and be like, oh, I really should be going at that pace. But really, it's just whatever you find fun and whatever helps you get into the outdoors and enjoy yourself, to be honest.
And so if someone, obviously, I give from what you're saying, really, it's certainly, how can I put it? It's not the sort of thing that someone with no experience should be doing. It's basically you need to have a basic experience, even if it's just hill walking and maybe doing some running and build from that. So what's the best way of sort of getting into it? Because you kind of need to find your level, I would have thought.
Yeah, I think what I really try to get to in the book is that whilst you might be a runner, like a trail runner or whatever, it doesn't necessarily immediately translate into the hills. Mm-hmm. And I actually suggest to folk in the introduction that you want to actually spend a bit of time in the hills, because it's a very different experience to, you know, running around your local park, as I kind of already have mentioned. So yeah, I think if people are wanting to get into it, what I tried to do with the book was provide a bit of variety for, you know, there's those multi-day routes, there's the routes that kind of go up to about 27-29 kilometers, but then there's other stuff that's maybe lower level that people can sort of
right,
bit more elevation than perhaps they might have had experience previously, but certainly something that would maybe provide them with a little bit of a challenge. And that's what I like to see the book is having, is something that if you're somebody who's visiting Glencoe, you've got like super amazing routes like the Ballyhoolish Horseshoe, that, you know, for a mountain runner or a hill runner would really draw you towards that. But for somebody who's maybe just experienced doing, you know, a few 10Ks or whatever, that might seem quite forbidding. So you give them one of the routes that I've gotten in Glencoe a try that's a little bit lower level, and perhaps you add on to that. So yeah, I think for a start, if people are runners wanting to get into the stuff that I'm mentioning in the book, certainly spend a bit of time getting used to just walking in the hills and being up there and getting used to the different weathers and things. And then, yeah, just use the fitness that you've got from your running and translate that to some of the experience you have in the hills.
And okay, that sounds challenging. What, for yourself, I mean, talking about challenges, where do you see your own sort of running going? What's the big challenge that made you think, oh god, I'd really like to do that, you know?
Yeah, I think, like, I'm 26, and I think that a lot of people are like, you know, you should use the speed that you've got in your legs kind of thing and go off and race, like, you know, like super short races or whatever. But to be honest, as somebody who's come from much more of a longer distance and adventure sort of backgrounds, the potential adventures that fast packing opens up to me are far more exciting. I don't daydream about winning you know, my local fell race. I much as I sort of alluded to, I much prefer sitting there and pondering over a map and wondering how can I get from A to B and make it a super enjoyable and exciting adventure. Because I've sort of been looking at options for honeymoon next year, for instance, and it looks very much like we're probably going to be running the Lycian Way in Turkey.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And that's like, you know, that's a good 300 mile route, I think. And kind of taking it like a little bit slower, perhaps, maybe doing shorter days, enjoying ourselves a bit more. It's our honeymoon after all, but it's still that exciting sense of adventure that I really want to experience. So yeah, I think fast packing is the way forward for me.
It sounds a lot of fun. Well, that'll be a very different honeymoon from most people who going to Las Vegas and getting married by an Elvis impersonator.
It's not quite our style.
it doesn't sound like it. I have to say, I'd be quite keen on doing it if I could borrow your legs for a couple of days. That'd be fine. You have got a fairly impressive pair of legs, I thought, on that first on the photo that I've used of you.
Wow, thank you, John. That's very kind of you.
Well, they look like they've been used a bit, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose you do need pretty good legs. So if we're wanting to get into fell running, mountain running, sorry, I've used the wrong term there. What features are there in your book that would help them get do that?
Yeah, so the book kind of covers, as we sort of alluded to, 25 inspirational sort of runs in Scotland's wild places is what is the subtitle to it. And the book itself, it covers like basically five geographical areas of Scotland. You've got the Northwest, you've got the Cairngorms, West Highlands, Central, and southern Scotland as well. And so there's a little bit of a mix for everybody in there, from, you know, shorter distance trail runs to bigger mountain days and multi-day epics. So if people are wanting to get stuck in and go explore a place in Scotland, just grab a copy of the book. It'll be out on the 5th of May. It's currently available for pre-order right now.
Right, okay.
And if you fancy it, you could be in with a chance of winning an entry to the Ring of Steel Sky Race if you get a pre-order in. So you can either see that as a gift if you want to give it away to somebody, or you can see it as a joke and you can send it John's way.
Exactly.
Sure, yeah. He would love an entry to the Ring of Steel.
I would.
The book has got everything in it that a runner would be looking for. It's got stuff on terrain, so it helps you decide what kind of shoes you want to wear, because all us runners love a good pair of shoes and love to get it over kit. And all the GPX files are attached to each of the routes as well. So you've got my little scribblings about why the route is great, and then you've got the GPX that you can pop on your watch and follow it as you go around. So there's a little bit for everyone in there.
And how did the book come about? What gave you the, you know, what made you think, oh, I know, I could write a book about this?
Yeah, so it's quite funny, actually. Vertebrate Publishing actually reached out to me with the book. And I was very fortunate in that, well, I guess you create your own luck to a degree. But I've been a writer for many, many years, and been writing on my blog, rossrunswild.com. But before that, on various other platforms and as a journalist and in lots of different magazines and so forth. So I think I was very fortunate in that Kirsty Reed, the commissioning editor of Vertebrate Publishing, stumbled across my work at some point, and I ended up on her list, which was a good list to be on, I think. not one of those naughty lists. And so yeah, so then they came to me with the book, and they came to me with a few ideas of other books.
Right, okay.
And I just saw this one and was like, that book was absolutely made for me. It was just an opportunity for me to share sort of the accumulated knowledge I've developed through, you know, 20 odd years of following my parents around Scotland and getting to know the country inside out, and also to combine it with this love for running and the community of runners that is out there, and that I hope will enjoy the book as much as I've enjoyed researching it.
That sounds great. Well, it sounds a really, well, I was going to say literally breathtaking book, really.
Oh, very good.
Not
John.
Bad, eh?
That's not bad.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for talking to me. Really interesting. And I can tell you this, the last thing on earth I'm going to do is the Ring of Steel Hill Race. Thanks very much. You take care. Nice talking
thanks,
to you.
John. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.